And that led me to connect with the Sunlight Foundation, just as they were really beginning, and it proved to be a good fit. So I relocated to Sunlight and started doing full-time what I was doing on my own independently before that, which was to research transparency and try to represent the interests of people online looking for information about their government.
Hmm. Did you come through that as a computer nerd, or how did that side of it, the technical side, come through for you?
So I don't have any particular technical expertise. One of the things that makes Sunlight unique, though, is we have a large team of developers or technologists that are building databases and tools and advocating for more information about how the government shares data. So we do have a pretty sophisticated Sunlight Labs operation with a number of staffers that work on specifically technology.
Right. Now, maybe you can tell us a bit about the Sunlight Foundation. Your mission says it uses cutting-edge technology and ideas to make government transparent and accountable. From that base, how do you, as a director, how do you direct that policy and that process?
Sure. So my responsibility at Sunlight is to think through how the government should change the way that it shares information and makes decisions about what information to share and how it's shared. And I'm responsible for trying to implement those changes and try to influence the government and get them to change their transparency. So we work especially with the Congress and with the executive branch. And so that is our main focus as far as areas of government. And we also focus particularly on influence information, so money and politics, or the kind of information that lets you know why representatives are making the decisions that they're making.
What does transparency really mean in terms of government? What level does that transparency stop or begin? Can you give some idea on that?
Sure. So transparency, in the way that we deal with it, is the idea that citizens should be able to see what their government's doing. And so it ranges from being able to access bills or information about your member of Congress to information about who's donating to their campaign, what kind of meetings they're having with lobbyists, to the kind of information about what the president's doing or who top officials are, all the way to regulatory information about corporate activity or other business activity that has to be disclosed to the government.
Okay. Does it get down to, you know, like how much does a hammer cost on a government project somewhere? Is that the level you can go down to?
Absolutely. Sometimes it can be that granular. Often, because we're dealing broadly with the Congress and with the entire executive branch, we often deal on a broader level than that. But for some projects, it does get down to that kind of a level.
And now, you're a nonpartisan organization, but I imagine you must get some flack, political flack, coming back at you. How does that work for you? How do you feel that?
So I think we tend to anger both political sides just as often, and I take that as a sign that we're doing something right.
Yeah.
So we have allies and enemies on almost all of our issues, and sometimes that lines up ideologically or with the parties in one way or another. But yeah, we pursue our work because of our vision for how information should be shared and how government should be transparent, rather than worrying about the politicians involved or the parties or elections.
In terms of your process of changing the government, I mean, right now, somehow there is some sort of higgledy-piggledy process that the government does to let information out. How do you, you know, what process does it take to get that information under the current process, and how are you changing that process?
You mean, like, how does the process work of trying to change?
Yeah, do you send in an email request saying, can I please have, you know, this particular information, or do you have to go up to, you know, some office? And then what sort of physical process do you have to go through to do what is happening now, plus making a change to that process to make it more transparent?
So what we like to do is make our arguments publicly. So if you follow sunlightfoundation.com/blog, that's where we make a lot of our analysis and arguments about what we think should happen. And rather than having, you know, we do lobby. There are a couple of us that go to Capitol Hill often and meet with lawmakers. But more often, we make our arguments in the public sphere by writing blog posts or letters or that sort of thing, and making our argument in a public way so that everyone can evaluate it. And we find that that tends to bring our arguments more strength, and we realize when we're wrong or if there's something that we're missing by sharing it publicly. So that's how we tend to do most of our advocacy work, is through public discussion.
Mm-hmm. You work with the executive branch on transparency and ethics and information policy. How are they, when a new administration comes in, how are they taught? You know, it's obviously a whole new set of rules. How are they taught and how are they monitored?
How is the executive branch as a whole monitored?
Yeah, in terms of being taught, I mean, as they come in, there's all these new laws they have to live under in terms of ethics and information policy. How are they taught, and how is that process overseen, I suppose?
I see. Well, there are any number of different positions that someone could be coming into, so it's probably going to vary a bit whether they're a top official or a career employee, and it depends on what your responsibilities are. But for higher-ranking officials, there tends to be ethics training and requirements that they go through certain kinds of training. I mean, if there's someone that has responsibility for something that is directly related to information or transparency, your job is to fill Freedom of Information requests, then you're going to be trained specifically as part of your initial training on how to do that and how those procedures work. And then there would also be ongoing training and oversight for how that functions. And, of course, congressional committees having oversight hearings is an essential check and balance, and an essential part of having an engaged legislature.
The big thing that's happening right now is the super committee. Now, I know you've been working on that and watching what they're doing. Now, could you give a little overview about what's happening in the upcoming, was it November 20? November 23rd is the deadline.
Yeah, we're very concerned about the way the super committee is functioning. And the basic idea for me is that the super committee wasn't designed in order to make good policy or be accountable broadly. The super committee was designed almost with the opposite intent in mind, so that we wouldn't be able to assign blame to any individual lawmaker. It's a mechanism that almost does the opposite of create transparency or accountability.
Mm. Are they, well, there's 12 members, is that right?
Yes.
And are they literally in seclusion, or do they have aides coming in and out with information? How are they processing all this information and coming up with these decisions?
Well, I think there are a lot of well-established proposals for how to reduce the deficit, and the super committee members, I don't think they're necessarily working through all the best options as much as they're making political compromises and trading back and forth and trying to figure out what their best way forward is. So I don't know that they have to sort through. I mean, they do have to sort through proposals and their budgetary consequences, but just as importantly, they're trying to figure out what kind of allegiances and what kind of proposal can get them to the 7 members necessary to approve a package.
Mm. So it's a lot of the smoky backroom thing has made a reemergence then.
Exactly.
Interesting. Yeah, exactly. For you, it must be teeth gnashing time.
Yeah, exactly. It's really frustrating. A lot of the things that we found out about what they're proposing, it's not actually disclosed. It's an anonymous staffer saying something to the media that then repeats it. But we don't actually know what the deals are that they're considering, or the proposals and counter-proposals, so that's been really frustrating.
So literally, even at, there's been, what, a couple of meetings they've had, public meetings. So what's happened there, and Are there going to be any more?
So there have been, I think, 4 or 5 public meetings, and they tend to be very dry meetings where they just talk to budget officials and make sort of just the facts, ask questions, factual questions about what the consequences would be or what their assumptions should be about the deficit and economic effects of their policies. And so what they don't do in their public hearings is say anything at all about what they're actually deciding. They don't talk about their negotiations. They don't talk about what's on the table. They don't talk about what they might be proposing back and forth to each other. And everyone suspects that they've basically either been told not to or agreed to not discuss what they're actually doing publicly.
So when the deadline comes up, what is going to happen then? Where is America going from that point? It's pretty precipitous.
Yeah, it's really difficult to tell. I mean, if they fail to come up with if they pass a package, then Congress will vote on it, and it'll pass or fail. It's unclear whether anything they pass will necessarily pass the Congress. Just as likely as not, they'll fail to come up with a package. And then that, similarly, we really don't know what's going to happen then. What will happen automatically is that the automatic cuts go into place and cut defense and Medicare spending. It's very unlikely that Congress would just sit back and let those cuts go into place because they'd be deeply unpopular. So if they fail to come up with a package, I think we can expect to see a whole round of teeth gnashing and scurrying around in Congress to figure out a different plan.
So really, yeah, they're just trying to create a framework that Congress can actually work with
right.
Some basis to start from.
Yeah, and unfortunately the framework that they created is one where nobody gets to really know what's going on or be accountable for their actions. Yeah.
Yeah, doesn't seem like it's going the right way, does it? Yeah.
Right, no. No. Hopefully the super committee represents the sort of rock bottom point for this trend of creating commissions with no accountability. A lot of the biggest decisions we've seen made this year were made by the leaders of Congress and the president and then sprung on the Congress and the American people at the last minute where they had no choice to say yes to it. So hopefully this could mark an end to that process. I'm not all that hopeful it'll happen, but, you know, it's at least a possibility.
Yeah, it'll keep the reporters busy and anyway, at least for another while.
Exactly. And the transparency advocates, exactly.
Exactly. Your own, who do you lobby when, what does a transparency advocate, who do they lobby?
Well, it depends on the specific issue because there's so many different kinds of things that can be talked about when you say transparency for spending or ethics or money in politics or data generally or any specific issue. But we tend to work a lot with party leaders in Congress and with people that deal with spending and data quality issues or freedom of information issues. And so that really runs the gamut of the parties and the chambers and the different people that we meet with.
So you're mixing in, so you've got the executive branch, Congress, plus the political parties as well, all mixed in there. How do you find the difference between the executive branch and Congress in terms of the information transparency? Are some better than others? How do you find that?
That also varies. I mean, one big difference is that the executive branch, you can request information through the Freedom of Information Act, and they have to give it to you. And that does not apply to Congress. So that's a pretty significant difference. There are other places like the spending from official accounts where in the House and Senate they disclose individual expenses from their expense accounts with a tiny amount of money compared to the executive branch, but they disclose on a transactional, like a very granular level, what their expenses are for. In the executive branch, that's done at a much, much broader level, at the level of millions of dollars. So that kind of spending tracking is pretty lacking in the executive.
Interesting. They keep a nice little tight ship as much as possible in there.
Yeah, I think it might be because there were, in decades past, there were scandals about how the money was spent.
Yeah.
And so to avoid that, they had to create a more accountable process.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. It works. The work you do works, obviously. Now, I understand you've spoken abroad a lot. Can you tell us, give us some examples, how it is in some other countries compared to America in terms of transparency and ethics and accountability?
Sure. I mean, there are different countries that have different leading practices in any number of areas, and I'm not an expert in all of them by any means, but I know, for example, some of the things the UK is doing around data policy are really forward-looking and aggressive. And another example would be that in Brazil, the way that they track federal expenses is more timely and detailed and reliable than what we do in the U.S. And the same is true in Brazil for how they track contracting information. It's more detailed than what the U.S. does.
Interesting. And do we export anything like that? You know, your work, do people watch what we're doing here a lot?
Absolutely. That's certainly something that was true for the Obama administration's open data policies, where data.gov has been replicated probably dozens of times around the world since it was introduced in the beginning of 2009. So that's one example. And a lot of other things that the U.S. does, like personal financial disclosures or aspects of some of our laws, are often copied around the world. There are other places where we might be lagging, but the U.S. is often still setting standards for how democracy should work.
Hmm. Well, good. And now, with the Sunshine Foundation, per se, you have projects, and how does a project happen? Do you get a grant, or is it something you want to take up and you push it, pull it forward?
Both. Absolutely. We sometimes have specific grant-funded work, but usually we just have discussions about or talk to the public about the kind of things that should exist or that would be helpful, and then we'll pursue them. That's one nice thing about having a large team of technologists is that we can independently say, here's something that should exist in the world. Let's figure out how to solve the problem and build it.
Mm. Very nice. Sunlight Labs, that's interesting. I'd like to hear a little bit about your more than 2,000 software developers and designers. Sounds an interesting concept, working with all those people.
Right. So the core in-house staff of the labs is something like 15 or 18. Mm-hmm. And then more broadly, we have a large community of people that work on similar projects and are similarly minded about the power of open data and working on similar projects to visualize or help to analyze or reuse and republish essential information about the government or about corporations or anything that has power or use for people. So it's very useful for Sunlight as an organization to be connected with people that are really involved in using information. Because when we say we'd really like this to be released, it's not because we made that up. It's because we are actually trying to use it.
Obviously, you're getting information from a lot of sources. How do you validate that amount of information?
So usually our information comes directly from the government, so we're able to just add the disclaimer that according to government data, according to government documents, X set of things is true, and here's how we made that conclusion. So it makes it a little bit easier when you can rely directly on government information. Mm-hmm. Occasionally, the information that we share is not based directly on government information. It just, depends on what the information source is, will dictate what the best responsible way is for dealing with it.
Mm. Your work with Congress, that's fascinating. I know you've been up in front of a number of committees. How do you prepare for that, something like that? Do you get to know what they're going to ask you, or you've got to cover many bases?
So often when you're testifying, you have a pretty good sense of what they're going to be asking you, and usually the subject matter of the hearing is the reason that you ended up being invited. So preparing for that sort of thing is mostly around thinking through what your written testimony looks like or the submitted testimony and what you'd like to focus on. And then beyond that, it's it's hard to brush up on everything that might be covered. I mean, if you were an executive branch employee that was dragged in because of some particular scandal, then you might have a different set of preparations that you had to go through. But just as an expert witness on the topic, it tends to be a little bit easier as far as preparing. Although, you know, if members have certain interests, then certainly you'd want to check out the sorts of things they might ask you questions about.
Over the next 5 years, say, what sort of developments do you see coming down the pike in your field in terms of that? Because there is so much information now with the World Wide Web and the cloud. We're talking about such access to such huge amounts of information. How does everyone sort that and make it comprehensible? How do you see that process over that time period?
That's a hard question to answer. I mean, obviously, things like web search have played an increasingly important role in sorting through all the information that we have at our fingertips. But, you know, sometimes it's overwhelming. So between web search or things like the social web and being able to rely on your friends and contacts and colleagues to share things with you is essential as well. But I think we're all still refining what it means to pay attention to a body of information or to know how to strategically search for things. That's a tricky thing. I assume that the way that we engage with the Internet is going to continue to evolve pretty quickly.
Yeah, because I looked at some of your projects and, you know, you have lots of, great charts and amounts. It really graphically shows what's happening with that information you're getting.
Mm-hmm.
It's a nice process. How do you develop those type of tools?
Well, so most of our tools are developed as a result of a collaborative process through different parts of the organization. So we have investigative reporters and people like me that are working on lobbying and policy issues or communications professionals. And through these different kinds of stakeholders within the organization and different connecting points with the public, so journalists or bloggers or technologists, that gives us a good sense of different priorities to adhere to. So I think that's definitely something that helps us.
And yourself, what are you looking forward to working on? Any specific things that are getting you going these days?
Well, the super committee has been pretty upsetting gets the blood pumping, I guess, the more that I'm involved and think about the super committee issues. Also, there's a new issue regarding the Freedom of Information Act in the Department of Justice that I've been working on a lot lately, where the DOJ proposed to roll back some of the essential public protections for how the Freedom of Information Act should work. So that's something that we've been working on a lot as well. And then maybe a third category would be money in politics, where the concern is that we don't want secret or unregulated money flowing into political campaigns. So that would be a third big category.
We seem to be, you know, going to forward, going backwards. We have secret committees. We have corporations with unlimited spending in the political arena. Are we in the Wild West days again? What happened?
Yeah, there's been a systematic move towards deregulating money in politics, and we've often been told by the people responsible that transparency is important, but now that they're rolling back some of the other core campaign finance laws, transparency is still not catching up. So this is going to be one of the more secretive elections in recent times, as we have all this dark money flowing into political campaigns, and not just campaigns, but also third-party groups that have been set up to support or oppose candidates.
Interesting. Now, you mentioned the Freedom of Information Act and the Department of Justice. How do they push back that? I mean, what process starts them saying, okay, we want to roll that back? What's the catalyst there, and who is the catalyst that creates that flow towards that?
So there are some well-known figures in D.C., like campaign finance lawyers, that are strident foes of campaign finance regulation. I think that the Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell is also a pretty well-known opponent of campaign finance transparency and would really just prefer if money was completely unregulated in politics, as far as I can tell. So there's some of the more traditional foes. But also, this year, it's sort of both parties, where now that everybody has these independent groups operating on their behalf, the discussion about transparency in politics is disappearing because they don't want to look like they've changed their minds or be hypocritical now that they all have these third-party groups. And so now it's sort of everybody that's opposing it with their inaction.
So how do those groups apply pressure to the Department of Justice, say, to want them to, you know, push back those protections?
So for the DOJ issue, it's unlikely that outside pressure led them to do that. I think it's probably just their own doing, where they said, we'd rather not have to deal with all these FOIA requests, and so we're going to rescind some of these regulations. But for many of these other groups, the donations and influence they have, they do it so they can lobby, first of all, so that they buy access for their lobbyists to be able to get whatever policy results they want out of Congress. Mm-hmm. And they also do it because they want to be able to change elections. So if you're giving $1 million to a third-party group that's going to help elect certain people, you're doing it because you want them to win, and you're doing it because you have policies that you want to buy. I think both of those things are the incentives for pouring that much money into an election.
A tough road to hoe, this type of thing, when you go up against such large obstacles in the way. But at least, I suppose, you know, with modern communications and the web, at least it is easier, and at least it is easier to get the word out. So some things are playing into your hand in that respect, you know, which is great.
Yeah, we're trying to take the one really positive thing about communicating about politics, which is the internet, and help use that to try to deal with some of the most negative things that are happening in the way our politics works, which is all this secretive influence that's happening. So, yeah, I think that's a good description.
Yeah, because obviously locally here in California we have the Brown Act, which governs governmental meetings and things like that, and it's still very imperfect, let's put it that way. There really isn't a lot of regulation or, you know, oversight of it, so it's interesting. You can pass a law, but it doesn't mean...
Right, and sometimes states or countries will pass a law that has great requirements, but if it's unenforceable, or if people ignore it, or if the courts are unwilling to do it, then sometimes it'll just die. But one thing I've learned in dealing with other countries is that we're lucky in the U.S. Despite all the shortcomings, we're lucky to have a system that works as well as ours does, compared to other places where they can have a law requiring disclosure, but everybody just lies on the forms, and it's just a matter of course. You know, the kind of corruption we have is corrosive and undermines government. But at least we can apply for building permits or get a speeding ticket without having to pay a bribe. So there are certainly things that we have to be happy about as far as the way our system of government functions.
Okay, I'm trying to grasp a ray of hope.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I really appreciate your interview, John. Is there any special events coming up, or your information about people to check out what you're doing and the Sunlight Foundation?
Sure, I would say to go to sunlightfoundation.com is a great way to check out what we're doing, and especially the blog is where we talk about a lot of what's going on in the immediate present. And if you're interested in the Super Committee issue, then there should be a link from the homepage, but you can also go to sunlightfoundation.com/supercommittee to see all kinds of information about things we're planning and what we're trying to do.
The Occupy movement, getting into that, what's your view on that?
I don't know that we're getting into it. We work with any groups that are interested in issues like lobbying disclosure, or campaign finance disclosure, or spending transparency. So just like we've worked with Tea Party groups to talk about those issues, we are also talking to the Occupy movement and sharing our tools and information with them. So we work with all groups that are interested in issues like ours.
Oh, great. Well, thank you very, very much, John. I really appreciate the interview, and great work. Keep it up. We need
thank
more.
Thank you. Thank you very much. My pleasure. Have a great day.
Thanks so much.
Bye. All right. Bye-bye.